As we've seen from this series, a major part of Christianity is the process of changing from looking like the world to looking like Christ. It's about Christ in you, making an adjustment from the inside out. We find passages like 2 Corinthians 13:5. Test yourselves to see if you are in the faith. Examine yourselves, or do you not recognize this about yourselves, that Jesus Christ is in you, unless indeed you fail the test? In Galatians 2:20, I have been crucified with Christ, and it is no longer I who live, but Christ lives in me. In the life which I now live in the flesh, I live by faith in the Son of God who loved me and delivered himself up for me. Luke 9:23, and he, that is Jesus, was saying to them all, if anyone wishes to come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me. You see, it's a dying to self that Christ might live in me. I move out and Christ moves in. And we can see from Luke 9, this is a daily thing because the old you keeps wanting to come back. But you've got to deny self and say, I don't want to be that person anymore. We're now to have the mind and heart of Christ. We are to think the way he would think, say what he would say, and act the way he would act. 1 John 2:6, the one who says he abides in him ought himself to walk in the same manner as he walked. Or as Peter put it, we are to follow in his steps. And so I believe that we are to always ask that question, what would Jesus do? And of course, that question is useless if I don't know what Jesus would do. And so we need to be looking through the Gospels to see what Jesus did in the different circumstances of life and how we can learn from and imitate him. Well, today, I want to take a look at Jesus and submission. The captain of the ship, he looked into the dark night, and he saw faint lights in the distance. And so immediately he told his signalman to send a message. Alter your course 10 degrees south. Well, promptly a return message was received. Alter your course 10 degrees north. The captain is pretty angry. You know, his command had been ignored, so he sent a second message. Alter your course 10 degrees south. I am the captain. And soon another message was received. Alter your course 10 degrees north. I am Seaman Third Class Jones. Well, immediately the captain, he sent a third message, knowing the fear it would evoke. Alter your course 10 degrees south. I am a battleship. And the reply came. Alter your course 10 degrees north. I am a lighthouse. Submission, of course, is speaking of voluntarily yielding or submitting oneself to the will or authority of another, okay, to comply with their instructions or desires. Now, who here likes to submit? Okay, this is something that I unquestionably do not like to do. Hey, I've got my rights, and no one's going to tell me what to do. See, I want what I want, and I want it in my own way and time. The fact is, I'm just too important, and everyone else should submit to me. Besides, the world revolves around me, doesn't it? There's a passage that's always impressed me, and it's been asked, what would the world be like if everyone actually followed it? Philippians 2:3-5. Do nothing from selfishness or empty conceit, but with humility of mind, regard one another as more important than yourselves. Do not merely look out for your own personal interests, but also for the interests of others. Have this attitude in yourselves, which was also in Christ Jesus. Now just let that sink in. See, I don't think I know anyone who actually enjoys submitting. Submission, it takes humility, it takes some real denying self, doesn't it? But what really strikes me is that the most important person who ever walked on this earth lived a life of submission. Jesus was the creator of the universe. John 1, Colossians 1, Hebrews 1. But amazingly, while on earth, we see him submitting. And there are three different areas I want us to look at today where he was submissive and where I believe we are to imitate him. Now, this sermon is going to be very difficult for some people to swallow. Because in this culture, just the word submission causes the hair on the back of our neck to stand up. Okay, we make heroes of people who stand up for themselves and won't submit to anyone's authority. The only submission that we like is when we are beating the competition or our enemies into submission. But as you know, God's perspective, it's often very different from the world's perspective. So number one, submitting to the Father. Now you might ask, if Jesus was God, why do you have to submit to the Father? Well, the answer is, when he came to earth, Jesus emptied himself. Philippians 2, 6 through 8. Now I think that's referring to the privileges of deity. In Hebrews chapter 2 and verse 17, it tells us that in order to become that merciful and faithful high priest, he had to be made like us in all things. And so while on earth, Jesus had to rely on and submit to the Father just like every other human. Well, we find passages like John 6:38. For I have come down from heaven not to do my own will, but the will of him who sent me. John 15, verse 10. If you keep my commandments, you will abide in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in his love. Matthew 26:39. My Father, if it is possible, let this cup pass from me, yet not as I will, but as you will. Philippians 2:8. And being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross. And so we can even see him submitting when he didn't want to. So what about us? See, whenever God tells us something in his word, we've got a simple choice: obey or disobey. And if we refuse to obey, well, it's going to cause some problems. First of all, it'll cause problems for this life. If you got a Bible handy, if you would, let's turn over to 1 Peter chapter 3. We're going to read that in a moment. God created us, and he knows what's best for us. See, when he tells us what to do, it's not because he's a cruel dictator on a power trip. It's because he loves us, and he always has our best interest at heart. God is more on your side than anyone else. And so many people, they rebel against God and they end up with mental, emotional, and even physical scars. And I know that you can think of plenty of examples. See, it often ends in things like STDs, DUIs, broken homes, jail time, shortened lifespan, and so forth. As B.B. Baxter once put it, Christ's way is not only the true way in logic and reason, it also works. You see, Christianity, it really does work when followed correctly. So let's read 1 Peter 3, verses 8 through 12. To sum up, all of you be harmonious, sympathetic, brotherly, kind-hearted, and humble in spirit, not returning evil for evil or insult for insult, but giving a blessing instead. For you were created for the very purpose that you might inherit a blessing. And then, you know, quoting from Psalm 34, Peter said, let him who means to love life and see good days, hold on to that, refrain his tongue from evil and his lips from speaking guile. And let him turn away from evil and do good. Let him seek peace and pursue it. For the eyes of the Lord are upon the righteous, and his ears attend to their prayer. But the face of the Lord is against those who do evil. Do you mean to love life and see good days? Life is hard enough as it is without causing ourselves extra problems. Well, not only will disobedience cause problems for this life, but more importantly, for the life to come. 2 Thessalonians 1, 8 through 9, it tells us that at the second coming, he will deal out retribution to those who do not know God and to those who do not obey the gospel of our Lord Jesus. And these will pay the penalty of eternal destruction away from the presence of the Lord and from the glory of his power. Matthew 7:21, Jesus said, not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but he who does the will of my Father who is in heaven. See, is it really worth it to turn my nose up at God and do things my way? This life is short, and eternity is longer than we can comprehend. Is my selfish pride and arrogance worth it? The majority of the world seems to think so. And there are many people, well, they just obey God until they disagree with him. But partial obedience is still disobedience. If I tell my daughter to clean the bathroom before she goes out to play, and she only cleans half of the bathroom before she goes out, did she obey? No. And it may not always make sense to us. Okay? And we're not always told why, but does that matter? We have to submit and obey God with what he has said regardless. The soldier has to submit to his commander's orders if he understands them or not. And if he doesn't, well, besides receiving a court-martial, the battle could be lost. Children rarely understand the prohibitions of their parents. And that's why parents, they get so tired of explaining everything, and so they often just resort to the old, because I told you so. Children need to learn to submit, even if they don't always understand why. 2 Kings chapter 5, Naaman. He was told by God's prophet to go and to wash in the Jordan 7 times to be healed of his leprosy. But Naaman, well, he didn't understand why. And he said, are not Abinar and Pharpar, the rivers of Damascus, better than all the waters of Israel? Could I not wash in them and be clean? But it wasn't until Naaman obeyed that command, the command that didn't make sense to him, the command that he did not want to do, that his flesh was restored. When Moses was leading the Exodus from Israel, more than once, God called the children of Israel an obstinate and stiff-necked people. Now, I'm sure they didn't think of themselves that way. Could that be said of us? Jesus submitted to the Father while here on earth, and we are to do the same. God is opposed to the proud, but gives grace to the humble. Submit, therefore, to God. James 4, 6, and 7. Now, let's look at the next area of submission in the life of Jesus. Submitting in our personal human relationships. So we find that Jesus submitted to his parents. Luke chapter 2, we read about that time when Jesus was 12. And you remember, his parents accidentally left him in Jerusalem, and they took off for home. And after realizing it, you know, just anxiously looking for him, they found him in the temple. And of course, he was amazing the teachers with his understanding. Well, after a bit of discussion, it says, and he went down with them and came to Nazareth and continued in subjection to them. Now, you think about it. Jesus was actually their God and creator. But as a human, he submitted to them. Now, can you imagine being told to go to bed by your creation? There are different individual relationships as humans that we are to submit in. And when Jesus was required to submit in these, as we can see with his parents, he did. Well, let's turn over now to Ephesians chapter 5. So, what individual relationships are we to submit in? Well, in Ephesians 5:21, Paul, he made this transition statement from what he was talking about, and he said, be subject to one another in the fear of Christ. And he then went on to talk about 3 human relationships where we are to submit to one another. The first is the husband-wife relationship. In verses 22 through 33, the wife submits to the husband with respect and submission, and the husband submits to the wife by loving her like Christ loves the church and submitting to her needs. Well, the second one is the parent-child relationship in chapter 6, verses 1 through 4. See, the child submits to the parent with obedience and honor. And the parent submits to the child by not provoking to anger, but bringing him or her up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. Well, the third is the master-servant relationship in verses 5 through 9. And we can probably find application here in the employer-employee relationships today. So the servant submits to the master with sincere obedience as to Christ, and the master submits to the servant by giving up threatening, remembering that the Lord is master of both. Well, we can also see the importance of submission in our personal relationships within the church. For example, we can see from 1 Corinthians 11, 1 Corinthians 14, 1 Timothy 2, and others that there is to be male spiritual leadership in the church. And the ladies need to submit to that. Some people don't like that. We can see from Hebrews 13, 7, 1 Peter 5, and others that the church is to submit to the elders who keep watch over their souls. Other people don't like that. And then, of course, we have that basic principle. You know, looking at that passage in Philippians 2, 3 through 4, we are to regard our fellow Christians as more important than ourselves. And in general, we are to submit to one another, Ephesians 5:21. Jesus submitted in the personal human relationships that God has required, and we need to do the same. And we may not necessarily want to submit in these different relationships, but if we are to become like Jesus, then we must. Now, let's take a look at the third area of submission in Jesus' life, submitting to the government. All right, well, let's turn over and take a look at Matthew chapter 17, verses 24 through 27. Now, this is that incident with Peter and the temple tax and the fish. The people like to say was most likely a loan shark. So Matthew 17, 24 through 27. It says, "And when they had come to Capernaum, those who collected the 2 drachma tax came to Peter and said, 'Does your teacher not pay the 2 drachma tax?'" Now, this was to support the daily services in the temple. He said, "Yes." "And when he came into the house, Jesus spoke to him first, saying, 'What do you think, Simon? From whom do the kings of the earth collect customs or poll tax? From their sons or from strangers?' And upon his saying, 'From strangers,' Jesus said to him, 'Consequently, the sons are exempt.'" You see, this tax was for the services in God's temple, and Jesus is God's son. You wouldn't expect him to be required to pay the tax. "But lest we give them offense, go to the sea, throw in a hook, take the first fish that comes up, and when you open its mouth, you will find a stater. Take that and give it to them for you and me." Okay, being the Son of God, he could have easily rationalized that he was exempt from paying this tax, but he followed the laws of the land. Now, if I was the creator and I came down, what would I be like? I would probably be stopping traffic so I could walk across the street, and I wouldn't pay a dime to anyone. But Jesus, well, he came to be our example. And so what did he do? Another example is what we find in Matthew 22. This is where the Pharisees try to ask very controversial political question. And they were trying to trap Jesus in what he said, because surely he's going to say something that's going to offend people on, you know, one side of the issue or the other. Well, in verse 17, they asked, "Is it lawful to give a poll tax to Caesar or not?" You see, they were God's chosen people, and God was their king. Were they to pay taxes to Gentiles for living in the land that God had promised them? And so many, like the Pharisees, they wanted just complete freedom from Rome, and some thought it was actually wrong to pay taxes to Rome. Well, Jesus asked for a coin, and then he asked them in verse 20, "Whose likeness and inscription is this?" You know, they said to him, "Caesar's." And so Jesus replied, "Then render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God's." You see, we're related to both worlds. We have dual citizenship, if you will, and dual responsibility. They had a relationship with the emperor and responsibilities in that relationship, and the same is true with God. We may try to come up with all kinds of reasons why we shouldn't have to pay our taxes and follow the laws of the land. But the bottom line is, Jesus submitted to the government that was over them and taught his followers to do the same. And there are some important passages for us in this regard. Romans 13, 1, the Apostle Paul, he said, "Let every person be in subjection to the governing authorities." And he went on to talk about that. Romans 13, 7, "Render to all what is due them, tax to whom tax is due, custom to whom custom, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor." Titus 3, 1, "Remind them to be subject to rulers, to authorities, to be obedient, to be ready for every good deed." 1 Peter 2, 13 through 15, "Submit yourselves for the Lord's sake to every human institution, whether to a king as the one in authority, or to governors as sent by him for the punishment of evildoers and the praise of those who do right. For such is the will of God, that by doing right, you may silence the ignorance of foolish men." Now, I think an important lesson that we can get from this, by implication, is that we probably need to quit bad-mouthing and making fun of our leaders and start praying for them, as we're told in 1 Timothy 2, 1 and 2. Yes, we have freedom of speech in this country, and yes, some of our leaders are an easy target. But we're told in Scripture to obey them, pay taxes, honor them, and pray for them, not badmouth them. And yes, there's a difference in respectfully disagreeing with them and bad-mouthing or making fun of them. We are not a militant group. And God doesn't want his people involved in rebellion or anarchy. There are times when we may try to rationalize, you know, not having to obey the laws of the land, but according to these passages, it's a sin against God. See, if the law tells us to go 25 miles per hour, then we're to submit even if we don't agree. And cheating on our taxes because we rationalize, well, they've already taken enough money from us, is again a sin according to these passages. The only time that we are to disobey the laws of the land is when they come in conflict with what God has said. For example, Acts 5, 28 and 29. We gave you strict orders not to continue teaching in this name, and yet you have filled Jerusalem with your teaching and intend to bring this man's blood upon us. But Peter and the apostles answered, we must obey God rather than men. But as far as I can tell, that is the only time. Now, some people like to point to the Old Testament example of Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Since it was contrary to the law of Moses, they would not eat certain unclean food, Daniel 1. They would not worship an idol, Daniel 3, and would not stop praying to God, Daniel 6. But even in their disobedience, you will notice that they were respectful. See, they acknowledged and submitted to the king's authority to punish them, even put them to death if he decided to do so. They were not rude, confrontational, or rebellious, and they obeyed everything else. Young children are often very selfish, and they have a really hard time submitting to anything. Okay, like most children, when my kids were little, they'd get upset when we didn't allow them to have or to do something they really wanted. Sometimes they'd fall on the ground and throw a fit. You see, it wasn't just your kids. The question is, have we as adults grown out of that? In his book, Celebration of Discipline, Richard Foster made this comment. Every discipline has its corresponding freedom. What freedom corresponds to submission? It is the ability to lay down the terrible burden of always needing to get our own way. The obsession to demand that things go the way we want them to go is one of the greatest bondages in human society today. People will spend weeks, months, even years in a perpetual stew because some little thing did not go as they wished. They will fuss and fume. They will get mad about it. They will act as if their very life hangs on the issue. They may even get an ulcer over it. In the discipline of submission, we are released to drop the matter, to forget it. Frankly, most things in life are not nearly so important as we think they are. Our lives will not come to an end if this or that does not happen. Is there anyone here more important than Jesus? And yet we see him submitting to the Father, to his earthly parents, and to the government. And granted, it's not so difficult to submit when we agree with the command, or when it's to a good government, a good husband, a good eldership, a good boss, etc. But does it matter? See, 1 Peter chapters 2 and 3, it talks about that in regard to having a harsh master or a non-Christian husband. Now again, this is not talking about them telling you to do something contrary to God, just something contrary to what you would like. We may be able to come up with all kinds of reasons why we shouldn't have to submit. But the bottom line is, Jesus did. Sadly, submission has become a bad word in our society, and we see this growing disregard for authority. Policemen have been targeted and killed simply for being policemen. Referees have been attacked and beaten up after calls people didn't like. Teachers have been attacked after taking away students' cell phones. Politicians are afraid of protesters at their own rallies, and so on and so forth. Well, that is not the way Christians are to be. When people look at you and me, do they see Jesus? It is no longer I who live, but Christ lives in me.